Okay, tonight's show I want to discuss what you should be looking for or what you should be aware of when purchasing Dalet Minim. Now again, there's a lot that goes into buying the Dalet Minim. We will not get into tonight to all of the four Minim. We will be discussing tonight heavily the Esrog, a little bit Lulav, but the truth is Lulav doesn't have that much to really be concerned with, and that we will discuss. Esrog has a lot, and Hadassim and Aravos really do need more discussion, but I don't think we'll have the time to discuss it this evening. But again, it is something that people often overlook, because very very often they don't focus on the Hadassim and Aravos. They just assume whatever they tell you is okay, but as we all know, that's usually not always so simple. So let's start off like this. There is a... Matt Ephraim tells us in source number one, Matt Ephraim writes... He's talking over here, actually, right after Yom Kippur. So he writes, "B'makim shematzi shom macher esrogim." If you could find people that are selling esrogim on Yom Kippur, noyin anshe meisel liyazrizu makdim and liknes on esrogim yofim hudar. You should try to go out and buy a beautiful esrog. V'chein lahachin lahem lulavim v'hadasim tzach v'tzachag. Every person, based on his financial situation, should go out and honor Hashem with his money. Meaning, people that are better off financially should spend more money on a lulav and esrog. A person who's not so financially should buy a lesser level esrog. But people that have, Baruch Hashem, money, should not go cheap on the lulav and esrog. Especially if it's a mitzvah that we only do once a year. Again, I'm not saying you should overpay either. I'm not saying you have to spend, we'll talk how much money you have to spend. But Matt Ephraim is telling us that people should not go cheap. They should go kefi hainei v'ayishrei. Comparatively to how much money Hashem has given them, they should try to use that money to purchase lulav and esrog. Shulchan Aruch writes, it's in Metof Reish Nun Vav, that we have by lulav and esrog the concept of hiddur mitzvah. We've spoken about hiddur mitzvah a lot in the Sunday morning shiur, zekeli v'anveyu. And we know every mitzvah has hiddur mitzvah. So the Shulchan Aruch over there in Hilchas Lulav is talking about the following scenario. He says over here, yesh mishoimer, she'emotze shnei esrogim. You have to remember another thing, Rabbi Yisai. This is very important. In the times of the Rishonim, Achronim, even the early, late Achronim, they did not, in a million years, have the amount of love and esrogim that we have today. If they would have seen what we have today, their eyes would pop out. They were desperate to take whatever they can get their hands on, and they made it work as best as they can. Because they were not as lucky as we are today with the accessibility and availability of the many, many options that we have today for lulav and esrogim. So a lot of the hetayim that Achronim write really don't apply today because it's just we have so much. You know, you walk down any street. I know by here in Queens and Main Street, I'm assuming it's down on Central Avenue, there is just endless amounts of lulav and esrogim that people are selling. Now, some of those are great and some of them are not good. We'll talk about that more tonight. But we, Baruch Hashem, as a country, as a nation, as a people, we have a lot to choose from. So there's really no reason to go make or bend over backwards with akula because we do have a lot of accessibility that they didn't have in their time. But in any case, the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a case of Yetzi, you have two esrogim. Shemotze shnei esrogim liknes v'echad ad hodor mechaveroi, and one of them is nicer than the other. So yikach ha-hodor, you should take the nice one. Emein mekayri moise yoise mishlush milagav, unless it's more than a third milagav bidmei chaveroi. So we spoke about this in the Gemara Baba Kama, that the hiddur mitzvah ad shlish, you only have to go up a third for hiddur mitzvah. So if you have two esrogim in front of you, one is nicer, one is more mohudur than the next, so you should splurge a little bit for the extra one, which is mohudur. Now if you look in the Ber Halacha, the Ber Halacha is discussing Machloikis Rishayim. What happens if they're both Mohudr? Meaning, are we talking about a case where one is just Kasher and one is Mohudr? Or they're both Mohudr? The question is, one's more Mohudr. So that's a Machloikis Rishayim. So if the Ber Halacha writes, number three, the Fishi Dezu, Im Godol Yoise Mikashir, if one of them is larger than the size, Afal Pisha Shneim Boim Lufanu Keach Liknoi, they're both in front of you, Mikomokim, Ain't Zrach Liknoi Sahadur. You don't have to buy this, he wants to tell you that you don't have to buy the more Mohudr one. But Rashi, which is what? That even if both are Mohudr, not that one is Kasher and one is Mohudr, then you have to splurge for the Mohudr. They're both Mohudr, but one's more Mohudr. You should splurge for the more Mohudr one as well. And he writes, V'chein al Yerabba Machmir B'zeke Yeshayimim, Achakach Matzostim B'fnei Moshe Yusham, Mishakas B'gam Kain. So again, many times we'll be presented with two Esrayim, they're both Mohudr. Not stand that one's kosher and the other's mohudr. They're both mohudr, but one's more mohudr. So then the chayra, the opinion of the Ber Halacha, is you should try to splurge for even the more mohudr one as well. Many people ask, are you allowed to use Meiser money to buy the Dal Aminim? So source number 4, in the Sefer Arbas Minim Kehilchoso, Ein Liknois Arbas Aminim Mikispe Meiser Ksafim. What is not permitted to use Meiser money to buy the Dal Aminim? Because we have a rule, we've spoken about this in previous room, any mitzvah which is obligatory, you may not use Meiser money for. Achen, however, Al Hidur Ba'arbas Aminim, let's say, for example, you want to buy an extra upgraded more mohodur lulva esrig that you may use meiser money from. Yeshahai, there are those who paskin sheefshar the shalom mikispe meiser that you can use meiser money for that. Imhist, if you made it tonight, sheitin meiser ksof from the choldov mitzvah v'loy rak laniim. That's if you made it tonight when you set up your meiser account that you're not only using the meiser money for aniim. So we spoke about this in the past about using meiser money to buy aliyahs this time of the year. We discussed that shayla that many people are buying aliyahs this time of the year. They're buying kibudim. So we also said that you could technically use meiser money if you set it up that way. Not that you first bought the aliyah, then you're going to struggle where to come up with the money. Because if you first buy the aliyah, and now it becomes a chayiv, so you can't use ma'aser money for anything which is a chayiv. You can't use ma'aser money to buy a pair of tefillin. But if you want to buy maybe a Rabbeinu Tam pair of tefillin, or a mohuder pair of tefillin, that you could use ma'aser money from. He writes in the bottom, who are these? That's the Shas Tshuva's Bitzel HaChachma, the Debrei Tzina Rav's brother, Rabbi Tzal Stern, Minchas Yitzchak, Tanyan Weiss, the Chen Hoyle, going to be Yitzchak Zilberstein, the famous Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, son-in-law of Rebbe Eliashiv. But he writes over that Goyim Chaim Kanevsky Omeli, but Chaim Kanevsky told me, Shalafi Raiva Poiskim Shesovim Shemaisik Sofim, that Noistin Daf Kolaniim Vegama Chaznish Sovikach, he Efshur the Shalom Mikispe Mais. But as we mentioned in, when we did the Sugya of Maisik Sofim, there are many people, Mr. Brewer sounds like that, that at least in the hierarchy, Maisik Sofim should really go Taniim, should really go Taniim Loim De Toiro. Again, today we give Maisik money really to a lot of things. We give Maisik money to build the mikvah, we give Maisik money to the Eriv, we give Maisik money to the mikvah, to Tatzolo, and to all these other things. But strictly speaking, Maisik money should really go to Aniyim, preferably looking at Torah. So he just says that the Chaim Kanevsky said that if you hold like those paiskim, that Maaser money should really only go to the Aniyim, then you shouldn't use it for this either. But again, many people today, Yaakov Kamenetsky held, you can use Maaser money for the Hatzalah and for the Eriv, for everything basically non-personal, anything that's really for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. So again, so you really should try to use non-Maaser money for purchasing the Dal Aminim. Okay, that's just a very quick overall background about buying Dal Aminim. Now let's get into the Dal Aminim. So if that's going to be again, the problem is you're still benefiting from it because now you have your Dal Aminim. So that's also questionable.
Overpay.
So if you overpay, that might work. If you pay extra for it, and then you and your cheshbon, that's going for his benefit. That might be able to work for my success. Yeah, I think so. Okay, so let's get into the Dal Aminim. So it's interesting. We know the Dal Aminim as lulav, esrig, hadasim, and aravis. None of those four words exist in the Chumash. If you open up a Chumash and you search the Chumash for the Dal and Minim, you would never find those words. They don't exist in the Torah. The Torah doesn't say the word Lulav, the Torah doesn't say the word Esrig, the Torah doesn't say the word Adasim, the Torah doesn't say the word Aravis. It says Arve Nachal. That's all the Torah does say. None of it says those words. So how do we know what all these four things are? So the truth is, there's an entire discussion in the Gemara in Lulav HaGolz, the Gemara has all discussions. How do we know what each thing means? So the Mishnah Berurah in his Akdama to the Dal Aminim, he writes the following number 5. Kosev b'Torah lekachtum lechem yemerishim pre-eitz hadar. It says in the Torah that you should take for yourself a pre-eitz hadar, a nice fruit. Now you could take a nice orange, you could take a nice grapefruit. Somehow we know what an esrig is supposed to be, right? A citron, whatever they call it in English. Pre-eitz hadar, kapos tamarim. Kapos tamarim is a branch from a date tree. V'anaf eitz avos, which are the hadasim. The Arve Nachal, which are the Aravis. The Kibul Chazal, Chazal Ara Kabbalah, the Pre-Eitz Hadar, Zehu Esrit. Pre-Eitz Hadar means Esrit. Shetam Eitz Zehu Pirishah, the taste of the fruit and its tree are the same. Whatever that means, discussion for a different time. V'Ksiv Hadar, and says the word Hadar, Shiyu Noeva Hadar B'Ta'ira V'Giduloi. It has to be beautiful. That's where we learned the idea of Hadar. The concept of Hadar, which we have by all the Dal Aminim, is Pashtus learned out from Esrit. Because by Esrit, it says in the Torah, L'kachtam l'chem b'yom erish and pre-eitz hadar. It has to be beautiful. So we learn from here that all the Dal Aminim have to be beautiful. Now, the Val Derech Shein Hizbar B'Sivet Tafresh Memchas V'Alfisha Kol Eilu Arbas Minim Ksuvim V'Pasuk Echad. And since all of the four species are written in one Pasuk, L'midim Zem Zeh, we learn from the other. Okay. Kol Arba Minim Tzvicham Liyaz Noem U'mo Darim. They have to be nice and beautiful. Now, just on a side note, you and the people in the world don't define what nice is. You know, it's very funny. You watch people pick out a sreg and they'll say, oh, this is so nice to me. Now, your eyes and Chazal's eyes might not be the same. what I consider nice in my, you know, simple eye, manabi what Chazal considered no. So you got to get that right off the bat when we're discussing Dalaminim and Hadar. We don't define Hadar. Chazal defined Hadar. They tell us what's nice and what's not nice, and we work with their interpretation. So it has to be nice. Now, Kapos Tamarim, what's Kapos Tamarim? Hu Anfei Ilon. These are the branches of a tree, Shegoydlim Batmarim, that they grow dates. So it sounds like from the Mishnah Berurah that the definition of a lulav tree is a tree that grows dates, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes. Kishi Tzmachu, when they sprout, Koydim Shizkashu, all of them before the leaves get hard. Okay. Elokishu, okay, then what's Anaf Eitz Avos? Hu Hadasim, Sha'olon Chupin Es Eitzay, because if you look at the Hadasim, there's very little space of the tree. The branches are almost all full of leaves. That's how the Gemara says in Sukkah. How do we know that Anaf Eitz Avos is Hadasim? Because the Hadasim, there's very little tree space. If you look at it, take one of your Hadasim, you'll see that they're always, it's almost the whole way up the branch, it's covered with leaves. That's how the Gemara calls it. It's Chupin, it's covered with leaves. So each one of the Dalaminim have their own siman. Tof Resh Mem Ches is Esrig. Tof Resh Mem Hey is Lulav. Tof Resh Mem Ches is Esrig. Tof Resh Mem Vav is Hadas. Tof Resh Mem Zayin is Arab. Okay, so that's all we know about these things. So let's talk about the Lulav for 1 second. So with the Lulav, we mentioned, Mr. Brewer says that the Lulav is a Kapos Tamar. It is the branch from a palm tree. That was, what did Mr. Bruce say over here? Shegodlam batmarim. They grow dates. Now, when you buy a lulav in the store, do you have any idea if that tree produced dates? Now, for my little bit of science, there's two types of date trees. There's a female date tree and a male date tree. The female date tree produces dates and the male does not. So when you buy a lulav, should you ask the seller, by the way, did this come from a tree that produced dates? Or you don't even bother asking. So if you look in the Chassam Sofer, in number 6, the Chassam Sofer writes, he writes over here, "Mnezer nearly noigim lehedja b'li pikpok likach lulav magadolim in the seinu." Asher la'olam layotzi tomorrow. Says the Chassam Sofer here in Hungary, we all took lulavim. They never produced any dates, and not any problem. Mikomok and mikri kapos tomorrow. Ki aminik rekein. The species is called a date tree, a palm tree, even though it doesn't produce any dates. So the Chassam Sofer had no problem taking a lulav that does not produce any form of. any form of dates. However, if you look over in the B'nai Tzion, this is a sefer written by the Mishpacha from the monk from the Darkei Tshuva, who's a son, Darkei Tshuva was the father of the Minchas Lov, the great Munkat She Rebbe. He writes at the end of it, he says, "Omnam re'isi la'avoisa ha'kadoshu ma'agoyin, I saw by my great family, va'adoini avi mari, sham shloima va'adoini avi mari, bal Darkei Tshuva, the famous Darkei Tshuva, shalokhu lulavim imikoymus ha'yiduim Hamin Shegdolim Shom Tamarim. The Darkei Tshuva was Taka Makbid to only take a lulav that he knew produced dates. And if I try to, I try to be Makbid. So although the Chassam Sofer had said in Hungary no one was Makbid, the Darkei Tshuva and the Munkacha family, they try to find the lulav that happens to have, that produces dates. Now, on a side note, the Derry lulav, which many of us buy the Derry lulav. The Derry lulav is from a tree that produces. So if you want to, one of the perks in buying Derry lulav, besides what happens, which is many of the lulav that you'll buy today is a Derry lulav. So if you're going to go to the store and you're going to buy a Derry lulav, the Derry lulav is from a female tree, and it does produce tamarim, it produces dates. So you'll have this chumrah of that it produces dates if you go with the Derry. The problem is most of the guys that sell lulav will not be able to answer that question for you. They will not know if the lulav produced it or not. They're usually not involved. But if you get a guy who's taka holding in the sugya, he'll be able to answer. But I'm telling you, the Derry, I did a little bit of research, the Derry lulavs all produce tamarim, so the Derry lulavs have this chumrah. Now again, most rabbonim will not even put this on their list of chumras. I don't think, I have to double check the booklet that Abshai put together, Stewie, that I saw. Very nice, well done. I complimented him on it, I thought it was beautiful. I don't know if he even mentions this chumrah. This is a real, as people call, this is like the cherry on top of the cake. Like, this is like extra chumrah. No one is makbid on this chumrah to have the lulav producing tamarim, even though we'll see in a second, the Rogachev was. But Lamai said, the Derry lulavim, you'll get it. So just that maybe another reason to buy Derry lulav is you'll get this. So if you look in the Rogachava, in the Sefer Tzofnas Paneach, he taka tainas it's machloikis, whether or not you have to only buy a lulav that actually actively produces dates. He writes over number 8, Hinek zekvar kasavti, the esrik tzarech davkishi apri, v'ayin tzuka, When it comes to the lulav, should you only buy a lulav that actually produces dates? Says the Rogat Shava, it's a machloikis tanoim in Yushalmi in Sukkah and Teres Kayanim. Okay? I guess most of us missed that one the first time we learned it. It's a machloikis, Rebakiva and Rebtafin in Yushalmi in the Teres Kayanim. The Rebakiva Oma Kapis Tamarim, it's got to be Kapis Tamarim. Rebakiva, even now, the Kapis Tamarim Shmam, that's just the name. It doesn't actually have to produce. Rak Hashem. He says, and that's the Gemara Menachas. It's a Gemara Menachas that says, Arba Minim Sheba Lulav. The Gemara says, Menachas, that we have four species in the Lulav. Shnai Men Oisin Peirs. And two out of the four produce fruits. Ushnai Men Ein Oisin. And we assume that one of those is the Lulav. So he wants the Taina, the Rogat Shava Hel, that Yitakash is trying to find the Lulav that produces dates. But again, the Minaga Oilam is not. Most people are not makbid to buy a lulav that produces dates. The Rogat Shava was makbid, except the practice not to be makbid. But the dairy, you will get. Okay, so that's the first question you want to ask when you're buying a lulav. You want to ask, is it dairy? So now you have the chumrah of the Rogat Shava, and now is produces dates. What's the next thing you want to look at? So the truth is, it really depends if you're Ashkenazic or Sephardi. If you're a Sephardi, the lulav takes you about 2 seconds. Why? Because the Sephardish lulav is covered with something called kaira. It's covered with this material. When you buy an Ashkenazi esrig, Ashkenazi lulav, you'll turn it to the back. You'll see this brownish stuff that's on the back of it. So on the Svardish esrig, that covers the entire top of the lulav. You basically cannot see anything that's cooking on the top of the lulav, and they like it that way. So therefore, the Svardish lulav, there's very little to look at what to passel it. The Ashkenazim, we have a little bit more to talk about. What are we looking at? Because we all know there's something called the tiyomis. What are you looking at when you buy a lulav? So you're looking for the tiyomis. What's the tiyomis? So it's a machlokes mechaber and ramah. What's the tiyomis? If you look in Shulchan Aruch number 9, mechaber writes the following: Brias olin shalulav. The way the leaves of a lulav are born, created, kachi. This is the way they are. Kishehen gedolim, when they grow, gedolim shnayim shnayim. They grow two. Each leaf in your lulav is really doubled. If you look at it carefully, you'll see that each one of the leaves is really doubled. It's twinned. That's the way they grow. Says the Mechaber, the Gav shall shayni olin hu nikras tiyemis. And that's called the tiyemis. Again, the Mechaber sheet is every branch of the lulav is called the tiyemis. The tiyemis is the two together. And that's all the branches on the lulav. All the leaves on the lulav are all doubled. You have to look clearly to see it. And that's what's called the tiyemis. Now, Nechluka hatiyomis, if the tiyomis get split, beroiva all in the majority of the leaves psula. So again, according to the Mechaber, well, in order for a lulav to be possible, you'd have to have that the majority of the leaves are split, which is very hard to do. It only works if you tack your lulav and smash it against the wall. If you just handle it like a normal person, it's almost impossible that the majority of the leaves should be split. Very, very hard to find. And not only that, we'll see it has to be split most of the way down. Very, very hard to possible as far as the lulav. But the Ramah writes over here, we'll just skip to Ramah. The Ramah writes, he says, but the Yesh Mefarshim Loima de Mechlaka Ha'oloha Elyeno Amtsoy Shala Ashedra Ad Ashedra Mikri Nechlaka Tiyomis Apostle. Says the Ramah, no, we hold, you know what the Tiyomis is? The Tiyomis is that middle leaf that protrudes out from the spine, follow it all the way up to the top of the Lulav. If that is split, that's called Nechlaka Tiyomis. So again, according to the Mechaber, the Tiyomis is every leaf. And if every leaf is split, if roiv of the leaves are split roiv of the way down, then it's possible, which is very, very hard to find. For us Ashkenazim, we look at the one leaf, we call it tiyomis, the center leaf that comes out of the shedra. If that is split, that would render the lulav possible. Now, even then, it's not so simple how big the split is, says the Ramah. And again, that's what everyone's looking for. When people are looking at lulavim, you ever wonder what they're looking at? So the truth is, half the people have no idea what they're looking at. They're just looking because everyone else is looking. They don't want to, you know, feel left out. Those who actually know, they're looking to look at the top of the tiyomis. The problem is, the way they sell the lulavim now, they're all bagged. And they're in a plastic, and it's very hard to see anything. It used to be, I remember years ago, they used to sell them loose. So you could take the lulav out and actually look at it. Now, it comes prepackaged. It's very hard to see the tiyomis sometimes because you have to look through a plastic, and then they're in this another plastic thing. It's very hard. I was having a hard time getting a good look at anything through all the different plastics, but when you open up your own lulav at home, or the seller lets you open it up, you can take a look. You follow the shedra all the way up. You're looking at the top. You want to see if it's split on the top. Now, how much is really a problem? This is where things get interesting. If you look in the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, he writes,
Nechlokat yoimis, how far? Ha'emtsoi sha, if it's split, the nechlokot elo ha'elyon ha'emtsoi ala shedra ad ha'shedra. It's split all the way down to the shedra. It's kamat never going to be that split. That's nechlokat yoimis for us Ashkenazim. That the split of the top leaf is split so much down the spine of the lulav. Very rarely is that the case. So in order to really passel a lulav, it would also have to be significantly torn down. But, says the Ramah, but lechatchila mitzvah min amuvchar noigim lita lulav shalei nechlko elo elyon klav. But there's a mitzvah min amuvchar to buy a lulav where the tiyomis is not split at all. Why? Ki yesh machmir, because there are those that are machmir, filu benichla ktsas, even if it's only a little split. So that's what everyone's looking for. They're not looking to see if it's really Nechlokat Yemis, because Nechlokat Yemis is really much further down. They're looking for the Yesh Machmirim. The Yesh Machmirim says that you want a Yemis which is perfectly intact, not open at all. And even in that, there's another Machloikis Achroin. What does that mean? How perfect does it have to be? So if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah writes, what's the Mitzchah Min HaMuvchar? He writes, Yesh Machmirim, Sifkat Yates. Why are we worried that it shouldn't be a little bit split? Because we're afraid if you start off yomtiv, it's already a little bit split. It's very possible the more you shake them, the split will get bigger. That's the chayoda, that we're afraid the split will get bigger. Now, if you look on, he writes over here, L'dayte ein lahach v'ayim betaz, D'l'dayte ein lahach mibzerak nechla kishir tefach. According to the Taz, even the Yesh Machmirim of the Ramah, that it should be not split at all, is only a problem if it's split a tefach. How big is a tefach? Anywhere between 2.9 and 4 inches. So according to the Taz, when you're looking at the top of the Tiyomis with a magnifying glass, you're overdoing it. Because even if it's a little bit split, it's still in the category of Mehudar. Because first of all, it's for sure kosher according to the Rambam, and even the Yesh Machmirim say it's okay as long as it's not split a tefach. So that's horror number two, one. Secondly, the Mishnah Berurah says, well, not everyone agrees to that. The cause of Chayodim, the Dezu, Yesh Lachmir, I feel b'mashu. But the Chayodim says, no, we're Machmir even for a mashu. And that was the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. So that's what everyone's looking for. Now just keep this in mind, it's amazing. Everyone's looking to see that the Tiyomis is not split at all to fulfill the Yesh Machmirim of the Ramah. And even in the Yesh Machmirim of the Ramah, you can always be saying on the Taz. Holds as long as it's not split a tefach. So now you just give me the ball. This is the background of all the people. I'm not making fun of anyone, Chas v'Shalom. And I think the briskers are makbid otzum, that there should be absolutely no split, no open space at the top of the tiyamis. But from a halachic standpoint, it's kosher sheba kosher sheba mohodr. Because again, according to the Ramah, as long as the tiyamis is not split all the way down, it's kosher. And even the yesh machmirim, you can always be samech on the taz, as long as it's not split a tefach. But this is what people are makbid on. They try to find a tiyomis. So that's one thing you should look for. To look for a tiyomis which is not split at all. It's mamish intact. The other thing you want to look for is what's called a hymnic. You want to make sure that even though if it's attached, they're not going in two separate directions. You don't want that the two tops of the tiyomis are facing each other like this. They might be together, there's no split, but they're going in opposite directions, significantly opposite directions. That's called a hymnic, and that is also a psul. That's basically what you're looking for when you're buying a lulav. More than that, there's really nothing else to really look for. So that shouldn't take you all that long. You're looking for an intact tiyomis. You don't want any splitting beginning. Now, there's a machlokes achronim. What happens if you buy a lulav and the tiyomis is slightly starting to split? Can you glue it? So the quote b'shem of Shmuel Kamenetsky that he thinks you can't glue it because once already it started to split, it already has this chesaron that it's no longer yesh machmir. Others disagree. They say, why not? The only reason why you want to glue it is so it doesn't get worse. So I'll glue it now, it doesn't get worse. So that's a machlokes achronim. I spoke to a moicher d'alaminim who said, just be careful, some of these glues can dry out the lulav. So just speak with someone before you start putting glue on. You know, Elmer's glue might not be the right way to glue that hole together. But pashas, you don't have to, as long as it's not, again, according to the Vilna Gaon and the Chayodim, you want your tiyomis to be completely intact. Mashenka, according to the Taz, it could be even a tefach, it's still going to be mehudar in the highest way.
What about the shedra being straight?
There are those that are makbid for that, but strictly speaking, it's kosher even if it's not. That's also an extra chumah that has to be 100% straight. That's also, many people are not so crazy about that either, that it has to be 100% straight. It's also, hiddur sheba hiddur.
So then in hiddur, if you get a dairy one, is that the kuyum in the hiddur?
I think so.
I think there's stamas that they're nicer. There's stamas that are nicer ones, the dairy ones. Now there's a big shiloh over here. What's wrong with Nechel Katiyemis? Let's say you wake up on the third day of Chol HaMoed and you realize Nebuch, some attack, you know, sometimes if we're not careful the way we, when you move your lulav, it's very easy to go into the wall or to your neighbor or to one of your kids, and you can taka do damage to the top of the tiyemis. Now what psul would it be? So there's a big machloikas apoiskim. Is it a psul chaser? Is the tiyemis split meaning that something's missing or it's not hader? What's the nafkamina? Because the psul of chaser is only a problem the first 2 days of Yom Tov. Hader is a problem all the days of Yom Tov. So if something is chaser, and people don't realize this, that if the pitum falls off, it's a machloikis. Is that chaser or a hader? Which maybe we'll talk a little bit more about tonight. But the Mishtabura Paskins over here, that if it falls off, that if it's split, it's only a problem on the first day. So if you wake up on the third day of Choloma and you notice that there's mamash, a huge split down your tiyemis, it's still kosher. Because it's only a problem of chaser, and chaser is only a problem the first 2 days, not the other day. So that's something to keep in mind. I'm not saying you shouldn't buy a new one, als hader. Hidr Mitzvah says you shouldn't walk around with a split tiyemis. But strictly speaking, a split tiyemis is only a problem on the first 2 days of Yom Tov. Okay, so at lulav, in my humble opinion, is basically that's it. What you're looking for in a lulav is a tiyemis. You're just looking for that top leaf to be as much intact as humanly possible. If you're a real brisky, you want it, you mamish take your glasses off and you're upside down. You're looking to make sure nothing is intact. The esrig, in my opinion, is a little bit more complicated. Now, the first thing with the esrig I want to talk about is the color of the esrig. The color of the esrig. What is the preferred colored esrig to buy? So this is very, very complicated in my humble opinion. Why? Because there's a Gemara in Sukkah number 11. I didn't write what daf. I apologize. I believe it's Lamed Aleph from the base. The Gemara says like this. The Braisa says that there's machlok. The Gemara has a possibility that there's a Tana that doesn't hold that there's something called Hadr. The Gemara says that Yehuda doesn't hold of Hadr. He doesn't think there's something called Hadr. Hadr doesn't exist. Okay. So the Gemara says, Frank, the Gemara, that Yehuda machshir tifte v'leiboy Hadr. Can it be that if Yehuda holds, you don't need Hadr? V'ha tanam, we learned in a Braisa. Hayoruk kikarsi. If the esrig is green like leek. L-E-A-K, the leek that you ate on Rosh Hashanah, the karsi, if the esrig is green like leek, then Rebbe Machshe, Rebbe holds the kosher esrig, Rebbe Huda poisel. Rebbe Huda says the esrig is poisel. So the Gemara says, 1 second, Rebbe Huda doesn't hold of Hadar. So if Rebbe Huda doesn't hold of Hadar, why would he reject the green esrig? What's wrong with the green esrig? Now, Agav, Machoikis, Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Huda, who do we pass on like? It came up a few days ago in the Daf Yomi. Machoikis, Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Huda, we pass on like Rebbe Huda. So a green esrig is out. But the question is, why is a green esrig out? So the Gemara initially thinks the green esrig is not hadar, but the Gemara says it can't be, because Rebbe Yehuda doesn't hold of the hadar. And still Rebbe Yehuda holds he can't use the green esrig. So for the Gemara, why is the green esrig no good? Says the Gemara, la mishum debay hadar. A green esrig is not rejected because it's not hadar. Elo loy, la mishum debay hadar, loy mishum deloy gamar peri. The Gemara says, you know what's wrong with the green esrig? A green esrig is not fully ripened. It never fully developed. So from the simple reading of this Gemara, the problem with the green esrig is not that it's not hadar. The problem with the green esrig is it's not fully ripened. And that's why you would not be allowed to take a green esrig. The problem is, if you look in Tosfos over there, number 12, Tosfos writes, Miu. Tosfos goes to all the different colors of the esrig. And he writes, the esrig should really be a zohav doima letzeva, yellow. It should be like a golden yellowish color. Umiu esrig ikroi doima leshava. Should be like wax. But v'oisim esrogim ha'boim lefonenu, yirukim kikarsi. Says Taisib, we got a problem. We get all our esrogim are green like karsi. So how on earth are we ever yaitse the mitzvah? Says Taisib, they're kosher even according to Yehuda. Why? Kishachoizim lemare shar esrogim. Because they eventually turn. Meaning the problem with the green esrog is you don't know if it's fully developed. But we know it was. It just takes time to develop. Since we know these esrogim will all turn green, we've studied them, we've watched them. Therefore, says Taisus, they're acceptable. V'afilu betolosh la'acher sheshov beklizman meruba, because since we know that even though they don't develop on the tree, they develop off the tree, but since they will develop and eventually turn yellow, they're vaday gmar perium. We consider them gmar peri, and you can 100% take them. So this Taisus is the explanation to why people take a green esrog. Why? Because the green esrogim that are sold today in the streets, the Meichrim will tell you that we know that these esrogim will all eventually turn. They just need their time. And therefore they are kosher even according to Rebbe Yehuda. And that's the way we pass on Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, Hayoruk shedoymel ispeh asodeh. If you have a green esrog that's comparable to the grass of the field,
You notice that everyone's using different analogies for green, and we'll see why this is going to be important, because there's many different shades of green. There's the leek green, and then there's grass green. The Shulchan Aruch decided to use grass green as the rubric of green. Says the Shulchan Aruch, possible. A real green esrog is possible, ella imkein choiz lemare esrog, unless it's going to change to a mare esrog. Then, kosher, kishim mesha'in oise. Then it will be kosher when you leave it. Now the shayla is, how do you read this mechaber? Then it will be kosher when it turns, or it will be kosher even before it turns? How do you read this mechaber? Does the mechaber mean that if I buy an esrog, the seller promises me it's going to turn, but come sukkahs, it's green as green? That's also okay? Or does it mean that I can buy it assuming it's going to turn, and then when it turns, it's all okay? But if a daka doesn't turn, I can't use it. Now, you've seen in shul, people take green esrog and they have not yet turned. So what are they saying, Mechon? So the simple reading of the mechaber is that you can take an esrog knowing that's going to turn, even though right now it's green. However, there's the chumrah of the Bach. The Bach writes like this in number 14 on the bottom. The Bach says like this. Many people make a mistake. They make a bracha on a green esrog. It starts to change a little bit. You have a green esrog. There's a little bit yellow spots. Everyone's happy. They say it's turning. We're good to go. And what's the cheshbon? What's their argument? They say, look, it's starting to change. So if it's starting to change, you know already that it's fully ripened. It just needs a little bit more time. Says the Bach, you misunderstood the Gemara. You thought that the Gemara was saying that the only thing that's wrong with the green esrog is the fact that it's not Gemar Peri. And therefore you felt that if you know it's going to turn, that fixes the problem. Says the Bach, let's stop shining the Gemara. The Gemara has two problems with green. First problem with green is it's not Hodr. And the second problem with green is it's not Gemar Peri. The only reason why the Gemara fell off from the Hodr Svara is because we were working at Behuda's camp. And the Behuda doesn't hold of Hodr, but we hold of Hodr. So since we hold of Hodr, says the Bach, a green esrog is not Hodr. Therefore says the Bach, the Gemara originally thought that green is not Hodr. But since Rabbi Huda doesn't need Hodr, the Gemara had to go on to a new reason. But now that we tack a paskin, not like Rabbi Huda, with Hodr, we hold it needs Hodr. Yaruk possum mishum de in a Hodr. Says the Bach, now green is out because of Hodr. I feel Gemar Peri, even if you know it's fully ripe, it's starting to turn. But green is a bad color. Hilkach dina kechazozes v'shine maris yovish the pasul mishum de in a Hodr. So according to the Bach, you should not take a green esrog, even if it's starting to turn. Why? Not just because you're worried about Nigmar Peri. Because if you're worried about Nigmar Peri, once it starts to turn, that's good enough. Or the seller promises you that's going to turn. But it's green. Green, says the Bach, is not a good color. So if you accept this Bach, when you're going to the esrog store, the first thing you want to say is no greens. You don't want green. Now, do we hold to this chumrah of the Bach? So clearly Tosfos did not. Tosfos makes no mention of this cheshbon. Tosfos clearly didn't hold that it's a problem. Both the Magen Avraham and the Taz, Taz was a son-in-law by the Bach, okay, so he argued on the Shver, he writes, he disagrees with his father-in-law. He thinks absolutely not. He thinks there's no cheshbon of green being a problem of Hodr. The only issue of green is it's not Nigmar Peri, and if it starts to change colors, or you know it's going to change colors, it's good to go. Both the Magen, I'm not going to read it because we're short on time, but both the Magen Avraham and the Taz both write, absolutely no room for the Chumrah of the Bach whatsoever. If you look in Yaruch HaShulchan, number 17, he also basically totally disregards the chumrah of the Bach. Let's just read it quickly. He writes, will change. Again, he says that as long as it starts to change, you're good to go. The fact that it's green does not bother the Aruch HaShulchan, and we'll see neither did it bother the Mishnah Berurah. However, it did bother the Stei Chemed. The Stei Chemed writes, he says, L'chein b'inan shiach z'kuloi l'mala esrig. He holds no, a green esrig needs to fully change to a complete yellow esrig. Once it starts to turn a regular color, you know it's going to. It's still kosher. He writes over here, because that was the minig in Yerushalayim. He says the minig in Yerushalayim was always to go not like the Bach. But he says at the end, he thinks he should be machmer. L'chein yesh l'hachmer l'achzor y'achar esrik shekulei marek gal, o'idoy melegal al pidivi Yerushalmi, deloy b'inan keshav amamish. So he says that even though the minig in Yerushalayim was not to follow the Bach, he thinks he should try to find an esrik that's already fully yellow, or almost going to be yellow. The Bikurei Yankiv, Yaakov Etlinger, whose psakim and dalad minim and hilchas sukkah are very, it's like the Mount Ephraim. The Bikurei Yankiv is like the Mount Ephraim that we've been using. It's quoted kamat in every page of Mishnah Berurah, or very often. The Bikurei Yankiv writes, oh, I shouldn't say the Mishnah Berurah doesn't quote him as much as the Mount Ephraim, but the Bikurei Yankiv writes the following, number 19, he writes, Mikol mokim bal nefesh, yachme, yochush la'atzmoy, kedas habach, shloy likach, esrik shadayim bo yesh, yirokes kikarsi. You should not take an esrik that's still very green, like a leek. Even if you know it will turn, even if it already started to turn, it's better not to. He thinks it's better not to. So that's one chumrah. Maybe when you're going to buy an esrig, they're going to always. It's funny. They always try to sell you the green one. Why? Because green looks nicer to the eye. Maybe we'll see in a second why people bedavka buy green. But pashtus, if you accept the bach, it's better not to go green. It's better to go yellow. If you look in the Kafachayim, writes that there are those who tainted that. That the minig in Yerushalayim was the choshes schiach liyos mare esrig, as long as it starts to be a little bit yellow. Oy shiadu bevadi shedarka liyos kemare esrig. You know, kosher afilu boidiyar. Again, same chiddush, that you don't have to wait for it to turn. As long as you know it's going to turn, it's kosher immediately. However, there are many gedolim that did not buy green esrig. For example, if you look at back to the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah has a chumrah that a lot of people do not know about. The Mishnah Berurah writes this. Rotzaloimer. If the people who sell the esrogim know the nature of these esrogim, that they'll change, if you leave them in a klizman ruba, according to Mr. Brewer, you buy an esrog right now, it's green. But they tell you, don't worry, these are from the kosher min and they're going to eventually turn. According to Mr. Brewer, you could buy it sight unseen, which clearly is not like the Bach. But he writes, but you should not rely on that. Mr. Brewer quotes Maril that you still should not buy a fully green esrig unless it already at the time of purchasing is showing signs of turning, because maybe it won't turn. So this is a big chumra, right? Many people go to the store and they sell you a dark green esrig. Why is a dark green esrig kosher? The answer is because it's eventually going to turn. Again, according to the Bach, it's no good. And even according to Mr. Brewer, you should not buy a fully dark and green one. You should buy one that's starting to turn already. Because if it's starting to turn, at least you know it's going to turn. But the Chayyid, Mr. Brewer, first of all, was b'chlal machoshish for the Bach. He completely had no problem with green, but he did have a problem with a fully green one. So again, you're going to go to the store, they're going to sell you a fully green esrog. According to Mr. Brewer, that's not really right to buy. On a side note, if you're curious, the Moichre Esrogim came up the following way. If you want your Esrog to turn green, you should put it in a box sealed for 36 hours with apples. Apples apparently give off a certain chemical that help turn the Esrog green. It goes so far as that the Achronim even have a Shaila, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos V'yomtif. You're allowed to put them in a box. If you're doing 36 hours, it might be different, but if you're going to do it on Shabbos V'Yom Tov, it's going to be considered Seveya, Tikkun, a whole bunch of Shailon Achroinim about it. But there are people that say it works, they swear by it. Rabbi Yashiv said it worked. You put it in apples, and they can't touch each other. You have to put the Esrog pitum front, but not touching, away from the Ukkitz, because it can damage the Ukkitz. You put it in a container, you seal it, and you leave it for 36 hours, supposedly it will start to turn green. So if you're worried about the Bach, and you want to try to get the Bach's Chumrah, and you bought a green one already, so you can try to put it in a box now, let it sit for 36 hours, and hopefully it will start to turn a little bit more yellow. But if you look in the Gedolei Achreinim, they all were makbid, or many of them were makbid to buy yellow. For example, number 22, Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Lechatchila, Yesh Lahadish Esrog Tzohov V'lo Yerok. Your Esrog should be gold and not green. And if you look on the left side, he explains, even though Mr. Brewer says, as long as it starts to turn, because we know it's okay. He says, but you should better to buy one that's fully changed. Not just starting to change, but it's already, that's the chumrah of the Bach. If you look in the footnote, he writes, Shlomo Zalman used to put his esrog in a box with apples, until it turned yellow. But he wasn't so machmir that there should be no green at all. Elishi ikreitzov. It should be predominantly yellow. But if there's a little bit green, that didn't bother him. If you look in Akut Yosef, Levad Yosef's son writes, Yishtado odom shal esrog yeh betzevatzov. You should try to buy an esrog that's yellow. Shezeh mohoda b'yosef. That's more mohoda. But if it's mamish a dark green, possible. But if you know it's going to change, then it's okay. Fine, but he writes the chen pashta aminig levarach al esrog kazeh is nothing wrong with. Again, strictly speaking, you can buy a green esrog and use it because we pass like the shulchan aruch. We're not chayshus for the bach. But again, it's an extra chumrah if you're looking. It's something to think about. Number 24, the quote from Rabbi Eliashiv. The Rabbi Eliashiv wrote. Rabbeinu Hichmer beinian esrog hayarik, who is makir green, upamachas posel leachim mitalmidav agdoilim esa esrog beemtsa nanuim bebeis midrashim mitama esrog hayarik. I don't know why. Apparently, there was one bacher was using a green esrog. Rabbi Eliashiv posel it. Av shaloi hayarik kabo. It wasn't even such a stark green. Rabbi Eliashiv was apparently very makir on green. If you look at the Moshe Sternbuch, he has an interesting kula. He says that in some places you can only get green esrogim. So what do you do then? So he writes. Ulefnim bi Yisrael ha'esregim shegiu me Yanaver, which we'll talk more about the Yanaver esregim, those come from Italy. Oy Morocco, we'll talk about the Moroccan esregim, of course. Hayitzuhuvim v'yofim. Ulechein pasul yorik. He says, no, if you can get esregim from those places, so that's why everyone said green is out. Avol lidon shebeit Yisrael besug shal building mekuvam hayem darkim kein kosher. He says it's very hard today to find good yellow. So what are you supposed to do? Avol vadish itzav. So he says, "My say gold, the yellow ones are nicer, and they're more mahoder." So he says, "Ublavachinir shall machmir shapolso yorik hainu yak yorik ikarsi." He says, first of all, many of this again, when you go to the store, if you went to the store, you'll notice the different shades of green. There's the dark green and there's the light green. So the light green is probably not a problem. The dark green is more complicated. But he wants to tie it like this: if all you have is green, so now green becomes hoder. He says, the reason why green is not harder because he put the green up against yellow. But he says, if all you have is green, so now green becomes the new harder. He says, that's what the Gemara says about an esrog hakushi, black esrog. If all you have is black, so now black becomes beautiful. So therefore, he wants to tell him maybe here also, since all you have is green, so now green becomes beautiful. But he writes at the end, he says, avu pshita, shim efshala hasi kulay tzol, but if you can find a fully yellow, zehidr godol b'mitzvah, v'cheinogu l'achme b'zeh ma'oid, bebeis brisk. The briskers are makbet to get a full yellow, no green at all, a fully yellow esrog. If you look over here in number 26 from Shmuel Kamenetsky, he's also quoted saying, mota l'chadchila little esrog sh'odiyar. You can buy an esrog that has green on it, because we know all the esrogim that are for sale on the stores, they're all eventually going to turn. So in the footnote, he quotes from his Rebbe, Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, said Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, you don't have to worry about the bach at all. You can buy a green one even lechatchila. He says, today, all our esrogim turn to green, they turn to yellow, no problem, and the bach is no problem. So Shmuel Kamenetsky basically threw out the chumrah of the bach. He thinks you don't even have to give it any consideration. Again, the Mishnah Berurah didn't give it any consideration. The Aruch HaShulchan didn't give it too much consideration. So the Kuryankiv gave it consideration, and Shlomo Zalman and others gave it consideration. Now, it's just interesting, what's the time limit on turning? How long is the time limit? So the quote over here from the Chazon Ish, that even if it turns after the Chazon Ish, Reb Chaim Kanevsky quotes from his uncle, even if it turns after Sukkos, it doesn't have to turn on Sukkos. You can have a green esrog, it will stay green the entire Sukkos, you're still Yetz. Why? Because it will turn afterwards. So don't get nervous if you bought a green esrog, and now you come to the last day of Sukkos and it's still green. You say, I'm not Yetz, it never turned. No, it doesn't have to turn on Sukkos. It could turn later, you know eventually it's going to turn. Okay, so...
are there green esrog that never turn?
Not the ones that we have. There are, but not the ones that we have. The ones, you should know, that the esrogim that we get are under hashkacha. The ones that we get are all eventually going to turn. You sometimes might have to wait it out, but they will eventually turn. So you don't really have to worry about that. But there might be a hiddur to buy yellow. Again, this year I tried to find yellow, because I think it's a worthwhile hiddur if you could. Now let's talk about the pitum. The pitum. Okay, so it happens to be machloikis rishonim what the pitum is. There is a sheet out there that the pitum is actually the ukitz. It's not what we call the pitim. It's what we call the bottom. And the Prima Gadim Taka says, it's a chiddush dekha Prima Gadim, and we know if the pitim falls off, it's possible. We'll talk more about that. Prima Gadim says, let's say you're not sure when the pitim fell off. So the Prima Gadim says, svek sveka. Maybe it fell off when it was okay. Maybe the ukitz is the pitim, and that's not a problem. It's a mardika svek sveka from the Prima Gadim. We'll talk maybe a little bit more about that in a second. But we all know the pitim is the top part of the esrik, facing upwards. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us, notal dod dadoi. There's actually two parts to the pitim. There's the dad and the shashanta. The shashanta is that little bell on the top, and the dad is the little sticky part. They go together, and they go into the esrik. That's the top of the... There's really two parts to the pitim. There's what we call the shashanta. That's the crown, fuzzy little thing on top. And that goes into a little sticky piece of wood called the dad. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, nitol dadoi. If you lose the dad, it's possible. Now, what psul is it? Same question. Is it a psul chaser? Is it a psul hadar? Let's say you wake up on the third day of Chol HaMoed and the pitim fell off. So if it's hadar, hadar is a problem all 7 days for us, Ashkenazim. The Mechaber and the Rambam hold hadar is only a problem the first days. But if it's chaser is only a problem the first two days. So if I woke up on the third day and my pitim is gone, if you hold it's chaser, no problem. So the Ramah continues, V'yesh machmirim, not la shashanta, if you lost the tap, dayinu masha anikar pitma, v'toyv la'achim v'makim shev, it's better to be machmir. Mi'ul in yindina, ein lifsal elam kenit al hadat. It's only possible if the bottom, the dad is missing. Dayinu eitz, sharosh pitma olav, v'rosh nikar shashanta. The tap is called the shashanta, and the dad is the little thing under it. V'chol zedavko kishenit la, that's only if it was removed. Avim lo yohi dad mi olam, but let's say it was without a pitam, kosher. And that's what most of our esregim have today. Many of the esregim are pitimless. So many people go to the store and they'll show you a pitimless esreg. So you, pitim fell off, everything's okay. Not so simple. Not so simple at all. Why? Because there's a big machloikis. When does the pitim fall off in the process? Almost every esreg starts off with a pitim and loses it sometime while it's on the tree. The question is, when did it lose it from on the tree? So, if you look over here, number 29, Sefer called Arbas Minim, very appropriate for what we're learning, he writes like this, Roiv poiskim, t'chol sh'nofel ha-pitim b'oid ala'it, as long as the pitim fell off while it was still on the tree, afil nofel b'soiv gedul, even though it fell at the end of its development. Because again, you can have an esrog that's fully ripened, and then it loses the pitim, so you can argue, at that point, it lost the pitim as already an esrog. What's the svara? Everyone ever think about this? Why is it okay to have a pitim assessor? The pshat is because it lost the pitim so early in its development, it never had a shame pre. So it wasn't a pre that lost the pitim, it was never a pre. But by the time the pitim fell off, it was already so developed, so why is that kosher? So many hold, no, it's not kosher. It's only kosher if the pitim fell off very, very early on in its development. Now, will you know that as a consumer? Absolutely not. Now, there are ways to tell. First of all, a good moicher, a good seller who's an erlich, a guy who knows these things, he can look at the pitim and tell if it started to get a scab. You can tell when on the tree it fell off. But again, most of the guys who don't know anything about anything will have no idea when it fell off. So it's a shtickle issue. Now, most achroinim, we'll see, Yerushalayim Zalman, the Chazon Ish, Vav Yosef, they hold it doesn't really matter. As long as it fell off while it was on the tree, you're good to go. But he says over here, but what happens if someone smacked it? Puzzle. Got to be careful. The fact that it lost its pitim, how do you know why it lost the pitim? Maybe it lost the pitim because someone smacked it. This is only if it kind of fell off on its own. Then he writes, no, there is a minority opinion, Rebbe Yashiv, not such a chashiv person, that held that if it grew, it only helps that the pitim fell off, it was early on in its development. Shadayin logodol shlish master, he didn't yet grow a third. But if it already grew at the end, it's possible. Okay, so that's a big chumrah. So this is already should be alarming bells in your head. When you go into the store and they're telling you it doesn't have a pitim, so you'll ask him, when did the pitim fall off? He's not going to answer you. Now, if Itaka is a good guy, and he really knows Dalaminim, he can look at it and tell you. And he might tell you honestly, he might say, oh, this was at the end. So then you're really running into a machloekes achrayim. Again, the Chazon Ish and Reb Shlomo Zalman and Rebbe Vajja will make. I'm not belittling that. But Rebbe Yashiv held not like that. Rebbe Yashiv held if it was later on in the development, it's not kosher. Now, that's something you might want to think about when you're buying a pitimless esrog. Now, is there a reason to bedavka not buy a pitam los esrig or to buy a pitam esrig? So you look over here, number 27, 29b. I quoted over here from Shmuel Kamenetsky. He writes nirish ein hider beetzem likach esrig and pitam. He thinks there's no hider to have a pitam on it. I would have argued, no, maybe beetzem and esrig supposed to have a pitam. So not having a pitam, even though it fell off early, is still a chasaron in its hider. Not a psul, but not the nicest. Shmuel Kamenetsky thinks not like that. He thinks an esrig without a pitam is no different than an esrig with a pitam. So many people say, so why should I buy an esrig with a pitam and have to stress out about it? I'll buy an esrig without a pitam. My counter argument to that is, well, you don't know when the pitam fell off. So maybe it's not such a good idea. So that's something also you want to keep in mind. If you're going to buy a pitamless esrig, first of all, maybe one could argue that a pitamless esrig is still not the preferred. Maybe the tsura of an esrig is with a pitam. Or you can argue that you don't know when it fell off. So then you're getting yourself involved in machlokes achronim. Now, if the guy tells you straight it fell off early on, so then you can really buy it without any questions. Then even Rabbi Yashiv would tell you it's okay. But if the guy tells you, I have no idea, or the guy says, no, I could tell this taka fell off late. So you are running yourself into a machlokes achronim about the status of that. Just the last ma'am makam over here is, again, just the briskers. The briskers were very, very machbid that there should not be any green on the esrig. A brisker esrig is a completely yellow esrig. Okay. So that's issue number two, that you want to look for in your esrig is A, color, B, is the issue with the pitam. But now we really get to the bigger issue. And perhaps the biggest issue with the esrig is its pedigree. The pedigree of the esrig. Now, even pictures, guys. Pedigree of the esrig. Now, this is where I had a very fun time this week. I was going up and down Main Street, all the different kids that are selling esrogim on the tables, and I'd come to them, I'd say, what is the pedigree of this esrig? And the answer they told me is, it comes from Eretz Yisrael. I said, so what? But the kid tells me, but it has a pitam. I said, so what? I could show you pears also have something growing from the top of them. What does that do for me? The kid tells me, well, it's from Israel. I said, they also sell lemons in Israel. What does that... So many people are unaware, and this is perhaps even more important than anything, is the pedigree of the esrig. Now, what is the issue with the pedigree of the esrig? Now, the truth is, this is relatively a new problem. Around 300-400 years ago, they started doing what we call today harkava, or morkiv. Morkiv means they start mixed breeding the esrig with other non-kosher esrogim, predominantly with a lemon or with other things to make it stronger. That's called a morkiv. Now, it's interesting, in the Rishonim, there's not as much talk about morkiv because they didn't have the science or they just didn't do it. Over the last 300-400 years, this became much more common. Now, if you look at your box of esrig, I'll say in it, Beli Safik Morkiv, Beli Chash Morkiv. What does that mean, Morkiv? So if you look at the Mishtabur number 30, Mishtabur points out what this is. Mishtabur writes over here that Hiskimu Apois Esrig Morkiv, an esrig which is mixed breeded, means they took an esrig and they grew it together with a lemon or something else. Hiskimu Apois Nim Shuhu Pasl. It's possible. Tolei Mikri Esrig Klal. Okay, there happens to be a big discussion about why exactly a esrig, a morkiv, is possible. What's its psul? But lemaisa, we assume it's possible. Now, just on a side note, because I ran out of space, why are there people that bedafka buy green esrigim? You ever wonder why? It's not because they're complete amaratz. They might be. That's one reason. But it's based on a zoyer. It's based on a zoyer. The zoyer says in number 26b, there's a zoyer that writes the following. It says in zoyer, im hiyuroika, if your esrig is green, mishubach yater ki gavna. That's even better. The huave ester yirakarekis. Because ester was green. So many people who buy green will tell you, because it's in Zoyar. Now my argument to those people are, maybe it says it in Zoyar, but it says it in the Paiske, not like that. It says in the Gemara, not like that. Right? If you hold like the Bach says the Gemara says that green is no good. So if I have a Zoyar or a Gemara, I generally go with the Gemara. But the Achrayim said, but this Zoyar is not a Raya even. Says the Vilna Gaon, Yaruk doesn't mean green. He says Yaruk is a vague term. If you remember, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said Yaruk ki karsi. Yaruk ki ispe hasode. Yaruk doesn't mean green. Yaruk can mean yellow also. So therefore says the Gra that even the Zoyar that says that the esrig, the best esrig is a green esrig, he didn't mean green. He said Yaruk. Yaruk can mean yellow. And they bring a Raya. They said, do you think Esther was really green? When was the last time you saw a beautiful green person? She was lemony. She was golden. Her face was light. So therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, Avada, the Zoyar that says the nicest esrig is green, doesn't mean green. So this is the counter argument. Even those who go out and buy green because they think green is the Zoyar, they're still wrong. Because the Vilna Gaon argues the Zoyar that said green, it didn't say green. It said Yaruk. Yaruk doesn't always mean green. Yaruk can sometimes mean yellow as well. Okay, I just wanted to finish up with that topic. Now, so let's go back to the pedigree. So you want to buy an esrog, you want to make sure the pedigree is good. So what are your options? So there are some very famous esrogim out there. The most famous one that you'll find today in many of the stores here is what's called an ordeng esrog. What's an ordeng esrog? So ordeng was the name of a person. Right? If you look over at number 33, he writes over here, before that, look at 31 left corner, guys. For us briskers, you can appreciate it. Hagriz Omar Pam she lav shereisi avia grach mevarach al esrog leichalti levarach al esrog. Said the briskerov that if not for the fact that I saw my father make a bracha on an esrog, I would never make a bracha on an esrog because of suffolk. How do you know? How can you trust the yichus? So he said, but my tata did it, so I do it also. That's how serious the briskers took pedigree. Now I wrote over here number 32. I gave you two examples. There's something called the Braverman and something called the Ordeng. These are the names of people. Braverman was a person and Ordeng was a person. Now let's read a little bit about them. Number 33. Ha Yehudi b'shem Ordeng. There was a Jew named Ordeng. Asha ha Yimegadla Sregim b'chadeiro. V'gdoyle hador ha Yikayimim en Sregim. Imagine if there many Gdoyim would buy a Sregim from him. So Ordeng was a accepted Meyuchas Diga Esrik for many years. Now, v'haboyim achrov higiu l'sholas hachazanish al sugi arkova mesuyem. If they came to ask the chazanish, v'oyser hadover. Say over that the Chazanish held Ordeng is not miyuchas. They tell the story of the following. They asked the Chazanish, what's the status of Ordeng? So he answered, "V'hoisef v'lavson." You want to know if you can, like, you know, eat it as a side dish? Can you make a bracha on it? He said, "Yeah, you make oitz on it." That's how against the Chazanish was of the ordained esrogim. Now, many of the esrogim that you'll see today in sales are ordained esrogim. The Chazanish held that an ordained esrog is possible. It's not miyuchas. He said, someone asked him, can you use it? He said, yeah, you can use it for kampot. He said, do you make a brach on it? Yeah, you make oetz on it when you eat the kampot. The Chazanish held ordained is not acceptable. However, omnam badatz shaleid acharedis chol kol Chazanish. The badatz disagreed. And the Badatz gives a hashkacha to Ordeng. So if you buy an esrog and it says in it under the hashkachas habadatz, you probably just bought an Ordeng esrog, to which the Chazanish will tell you is possible. Now,
they still like it because of Markov?
Yeah. The Chazanish held was is Markov, yeah. So that's something you should be aware of. I'm not telling you what to do, but that's something you should wear. When you're buying an esrog and it says in the box, tachas hashkachas habadatz, in English that means the Chazanish will hold it's possible. Now, yeah, the Chazanish held that it was, again, the Chazanish spent, the Chazanish spent a lot of time working on Yichus of Esrogim. That's why we call today the Chazanish Esrog. Why is it called the Chazanish Esrog? Because the Chazanish spent a lot of time, but he didn't create the wheel. What he did, he didn't recreate the wheel. He went back looking about old Alter Yushalayim and old orchards to try to find what the old Messiah was. And with other people's help, he was able to come up with what he considers the most mehudr. Now, what's Braverman? Esrogi Braverman is what? There was a yid named Braverman. Shetoloi me esrog sheberichol of Maril Diskin. He supposedly was able to get the esrog that the Maril lived. Shulev Diskin was also from the elders of Yerushalayim. Hamaril nosin garana me esrog l'tamid of Ebzerach Braverman. Supposedly, Shulev Diskin gave the seeds of the esrog to Ebzerach Braverman, his Talmud. The Nachtoi, his grandson, Reb Yitzchak Braverman, he planted it, and that's what we have today called the Braverman Esrog. Someone told me today that this story is a big fat Baba Maisa. It's not true. Okay, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. But there is such a brand called Braverman Esrog. Not as popular as the Ordeng, but you can get them today. They're on sale also called the Braverman Esrog. Now, he writes over here that they asked the Chazanish about the Braverman, and the Braverman said that he thinks they have signs of Morkev, but he says you can make a brach on it because that's the Messiah from Yerushalayim Leib Diskin. So the Chazanish did give his Haskama to the Bravermans, but not to the Ordings. So that's something you also want to think about. Now, just on a side note, many Yidden today take more than one Esrog. Many, many Choshevah people take more than one Esrog. They'll take a bunch to catch all Shittos. They'll take a Chazanish, they'll take a this, they'll take a that. We'll see more of what people do. Now, those are the first two types. So again, so the Ordeng is questionable according to the Chazanish. The Braverman seems to be kosher mehudr. I was told it's hard to get a nice Braverman, but they're out there today as well. Now again, if you're going to go to a kid selling these things on the streets, they have no idea what you're talking about. I tried it. They have no idea what I'm talking about. I said, "Is this? They don't know what it is." So if you're going to go to a guy who's really selling them, you can tell him, "Do you have a Brahmin? Do you have an ordaining?" Again, ordaining is under the badatz. So if you get an esri that says tachas hashkachas the badatz, it's a fancy way of saying you have an ordaining esri. Now, what are the other two types of esri? So you have the chazanish esri, okay, and then you have the Moroccan esri. Okay, what's the issue with the Moroccan esri? So it's interesting. Again, the chazanish esri was the chazanish is doing. He toiled and he worked and he found and he researched and he found what he considers belich shash morke. Now, what's the Moroccan esrig? It's interesting. The Moroccan esrig appears, it appeared in the mid-1800s. The Bikur Yaakov in the 1860s and others in the 1840s, around that time was when they started to make their way to Europe. Morocco, obviously, Moroccan esrigs come from Morocco. Now, today, they don't really grow in Morocco. Today, they replanted them in Eretz Yisrael. But the Moroccan esrig was known to have a very, very beautiful pedigree of Messiah. If you look in number 35, he quotes that the Aruch HaShulchan quotes, the Aruch HaShulchan already writes that the Bikur Yaakov said the nicest esrog he ever got was the Moroccan. So that's why many people like to take the Moroccan, because it's no chashash morkiv, it's miyuchas, and it was been around for 200 years. It's an acceptable one for so many years. So he writes over here, number 35. Yoishvi Yerushalayim HaKodesh Mishnas Tavish Chaldala Mesoris Kashris Esrogim Morocco Kenu Ba'Aruch HaShulchan. It's in the Aruch HaShulchan. It's already found in the Bikur Yaakov. It's already found in the mid-1800s. It's found in the Minchas Yitzchak. Ha'elu shekosvu she'dor shekor v'alfei shon. 1,000 years they've been making brachas on the Moroccan Esri. Moshe Sternbach says, okay, everyone likes it. V'yadua she'hagriz mi'brizka yimidaktik mo'oy lotis gam be'esrik mi'mirako. One of the many Esrikim that the Brisker Rav took was a Moroccan Esri. The guy in the Beishiv Shom Eliashiv, Ha'im Mavarach El Esrig Morocco, and the Eliashiv also used to take an Esrig Moroccan Esrig. What's the issue with the Moroccan Esrig? So he writes over there, Ula Yeshe Pikvu Mikimin Shein Amotz Bem Garinim. The problem with the Moroccan Esrig is they have no seeds. Okay? Now who says they have to have seeds? But there were those Yidden that Taka would not use the Moroccan because the Moroccans don't have seeds. But again, it doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch that it has to have seeds. And they bring a raya from a Tesefta that the Tesefta talks about the seeds of an Esrig. Okay, doesn't mean it's Ma'akiv. But Pashtus, the Moroccan Esrig, has a lot going for it. So if you look over at number 36, the quote from Eliashiv, V'yav b'shev b'chol ha'shonim ho'yikama pikpukim ala swegi Morocco. There were those that were skeptical of the Moroccan Esrig, b'frat she'y lehem garinim, because they have no seeds, ad k'dei she'om alimor ha'goyin 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 ha'goyin. Rabbi Yashiv held it's mamash sofik morkiv. They say that Chazanish also held the Moroccan might be morkiv. For also stamash and mikomokim shana achru izeh moron sholach shlich miyuchad. Rabbi Yashiv sent a messenger down to see how they're doing it, and he came back and there's absolutely no chashash morkiv. Umi oz moron hikpid lakachas davka mi Morocco, and that's when he started taking the Moroccan esrig. The tomid and the mile of the Moroccan is what? The tomid. They almost always have a pitum. So again, so the Moroccan is good as yichus, it's good as pitum. I know seeds. Okay. Who said you need seeds? Shmuel Vozner writes number 37. Who says that it's a required tanai? You have to have seeds. You don't have to have seeds in order to be on any other fruit. So many achrenim held that the fact that it does not have seeds is not a reason to passel the Moroccan. But however, the Munkache Rebbe did not take a Moroccan. They say
the name of the screen now.
However, they quote from the Munkache, the Klausenberg Rebbe was the only one that I knew of specifically that did not, the Davka not take a Moroccan. Bizmanenu Yotze Iru al Esregi Morocco Shem Rekovim V'gam Ein Behem Garinim L'chein Das G'doy L'Eretz Yisrael B'soichem Adma Klausenberg Shein L'Kochem. That's by and large not the case today. Most people do like the Moroccan. They hold it maybe even the preferred. And they write over here number 39 that Rav Chaskel Roth said he heard from Rav Moshe Bick that Rav Moshe Salavechik, because Rav Moshe Bick, don't tell the Chassidim, learned in YU. I was actually very upset. A few weeks ago was Rav Moshe Bick's yard site. If anyone knows Rav Moshe Bick, he was one of the great poskim in America. He had a shul in the Bronx. Rav Moshe Bick went to YU. In the article, they would not say that. They would not mention where he went to yeshiva. The Bedavka left it out. They made it sound like he went to some yeshiva in America where Reb Shimon Shkop was saying shir, but it wasn't YU. Now, all of us who know the history know that that wasn't the case. So it bothered me very much that they wrote this whole article, but they wouldn't write. Okay, in the Chassidish world, they're not going to give that chashivas that Rav Moshe Bick went to YU. They'll rewrite history that he didn't go there; he went somewhere else. But the honest truth is, Rav Moshe Bick went to YU, as did Rav Avigdor Miller, as did many, as did Pinchas Scheinberg. A lot of these gedolim went to YU in those early years, where Rav Moshe Salvechik was the Magid Shir and Rav Shimon was the Magid Shir. But people today like to
read Rav Gifter. And also Rabbi Rav Moshe Bick was also a big Pesach, not only for the Chassidim, for the Litvaks in Borough Park at the end.
Rav Moshe Bick was a Pesach for everyone. Rav Moshe Bick was a Gevaldik Pesach. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. Rav Moshe Bick was a Rav when he was single.
I can't say everybody, but almost everyone held like him. You know,
Rav Moshe Bick was very, very Niskabel. He was a very, very Chassid of Pesach. So it just bothered me that article where Dafka would left it out, the name of the yeshiva. But in any case, so Rav Moshe Bick said over from Rav Moshe Salvechik, because the reason why I'm telling you this is because where did he learn by Rav Moshe Salvechik and why you? That's where he learned by Rav Moshe Salvechik in those years. So Rav Moshe Salvechik said about his father, Reb Chaim, that he, Ma'oid Hichshir Esrege Merako. That Reb Chaim very much liked the Moroccan Esrege. Okay? So that's the Moroccan Esrege. I read over here number 40, the Yadu Ali Shamar Nagriz, the Biskirov. Diktek Ma'oid, he was also very careful, the Chibib Lotzes Gamba Esrege Merako. He also tried to get a Moroccan Esrege. And then over here he tells you of a famous story. There was a story that one year the Moroccan Esregim were held at the border and they were not allowed in by customs. And the Biskrov was very depressed that he was not going to get himself a Moroccan Esreg to use. Again, the Biskrov took many Esregim. One of them was the Moroccan. And he wasn't able to get it. The Shultanus Beretz Yisrael, the government did not let it in until Hashanah Rabbah, and finally was able to get it. Okay, a whole story. But the Biskrov was very, very makbid to try to get a Moroccan. So that's so far we learned the Chazanish Esreg, the Ordang, the Braverman, and now we're up to the Moroccan Esrog. What's the next one? The next one on the page over here, he calls it the Calabra. Many people call it the Yanava, or the Yanava. Yanava is a town in Italy. This was an Esrog called the Yanava. Yanava, different ways of pronouncing it. It is also open on the market today, the Yanava Esrog. What's the deal with the Yanava Esrog? So if you look over at number 41, he writes, Calabria was the bigger city and Yanava was the smaller city. Some people call it Yanava, some people call it Janava. In Italy, first of all, Rebbe said it's not Morkiv. And the Litvishes were all used to take Yanava. That was the best, the Yanava. So you can still get that today. You can go to the store and ask for the Yanavas. And you can get a Yanava Esrog today. That was very, very muhudr as well, the Yanava Esrog. Now, what's the last one? Is the Temani. The Temani Esrog. So the Temani Esrog are also very popular. Someone told me, I think Rav Shechter takes the Temani Esrog. Either the Temani or the Moroccan, I forget which one. Joel, do you know what Rabbi Salvechik took?
I don't remember. There was a fellow who used to get him one from Eretz Yisrael.
I was just talking to someone today, and he told me that the Salvechiks in America were not as makbid as the Salvechiks in Eretz Yisrael. Like Rabbi Aaron Salvechik and that whole Salvechik family was not as the other side of the family. So I was curious what Rabbi Salvechik himself took. Because again, he said that the Rav Moshe Salvechik said that his father, Rav Chaim, liked the Moroccan. So maybe Rabbi Salvechik also took the Moroccan. I don't know. I'm just curious if anyone knows. I'm sure someone knows. But someone told me, I think Rav Shechter takes the Temani. I think that's what I was told.
I can find out.
But again, if someone can find that, it'll be definitely interesting. So if you look over in Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt writes that the Temani, he says he remembers seeing it by Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. That Rabbi Zalman Meltzer took the Temani, and the Temani are usually pretty big. They're larger in size, the Temani Esregim. And many people used to take the Temani Esregim because they thought it's the best. They say that Rabbi Vad Yosef used to take the Moroccan and the Temani. He used to take both of them. So these are all acceptable ones. So when you go to the store, you can ask for any one of these. The Moroccan is good, the Temani is good. These are all good Miyuchas, Dika Esregim. They all have wonderful Yichas, and they're all Kasha. So again, This is just a little bit of a background. We didn't get to Adasim and Naravis. We didn't get to marks on the Esrig. There's so much more to talk about. But this is just beginner's guide for purchasing an Esrig. Is the pedigree is important. You want to ask what the pedigree is. You want to hear things like Merakin, Teimani. You want to hear, you know, Bravenders. And there's another one called Lefkowitz. Lefkowitz was with Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz. The Chazanish supposedly gave him seeds to build, to grow Esrogim also. That's another type of Chazanish version of it, but these are all different versions of different miyuchustic one, but you really want to find one that has a good Choshiva pedigree.
Now, Rabbi, I just heard back from Rav Shai Shem.
What does he say?
Yemenite.
The Teimani.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Someone told me that. Someone told me that he doesn't make a whole big deal about it. He tells him, bring me a Teimani, and that's the whole shebang. He doesn't spend hours and hours and hours being busy with it. But so he took a Teimani. Maybe that's what Rabbi Salvation took. I don't know. Could be. But those are some of the Esrogim that you want to look for. These are some things you want to talk about when you go to buy an Esrog. Talk to the seller, be familiar with it, and know what to buy.